Good morning. This hearing of the House Tribal Affairs Committee will now come to order. The time is 8:04 a.m., Tuesday, March 17th, 2026, in Capitol Room 106. Members present for House Tribal Affairs are Representative Freer, Representative Story, Representative Carrick, Representative Underwood, and myself, Chair Dybert. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. And a quick reminder to us all to please silence your cell phones. Before I begin, I would like to thank Jordan Nicholson, the Tribal Affairs Secretary from Rutgers, and Jude Augustine from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee day and keeping us running smoothly. Thank you so much. And I would like to say happy St. Patrick's Day. I enjoy seeing everyone in green. We don't want to get pinched, so. So we are entering into a very busy time here in the Capitol, and us legislators are getting pulled in many different directions. From here on out, most likely. There's a chance I might have to step out to attend other state business during our hearings this week. So before we begin, it is my intention to vote in my colleague and friend, Representative Story, as vice chair, so she may lead the committee in my absence if I have to step out. So with that, Representative Freer, do you have a motion?
Yes, Chair Dybert, thank you. I nominate Representative Story as Vice Chair of the House Tribal Affairs Committee.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, Representative Story is Vice Chair of House Tribal Affairs. Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative Freer. Thank you, Representative Story. All right, now with that over, we can begin. With that, we will move on to today's agenda. We have one item on the agenda this morning. We will have a traditional healing panel from three different regional nonprofit health entities from throughout the state. We are joined both in person today and online by representatives from South Central Foundation, Manilik Association, and Tlingit and Haida. Each group has been given a 30-minute time slot for their respective presentations. The remaining time of the hearing will be for a Q&A with all presenters. I ask that the committee members are trying to hold their questions for the dedicated Q&A time. So with that, we are joined in the committee room today by April Kyle, the CEO and president of South Central Foundation, who will be starting our hearing this morning. Her presentation will be followed by Manilik Association, and we will end with Tlingit and Haida, who is also online. Ms. Kyle, welcome to Tribal Affairs. Thank you for joining us at the table this morning. I'm excited to hear your presentation and just on a bus seat for being here this morning on this very snowy morning here in Juno again. Maybe we'll see summer at some point. please put yourself on record and proceed with your presentation.
Janann, Madam Chair, for the record, my name is April Kyle, and I serve as President and CEO with South Central Foundation. Janann, thank you. And I just want to begin by, Madam Chair, thanking you and the committee for making time to hear about traditional healing. We're really excited to get to share what we do, why it's important, and why this is a really good time for us to talk about it. Before I begin, I'll give a more appropriate introduction of myself. My family on my father's side is from the native village of Nanelchik, where we are Dena'ina, Athabascan, and Russian in heritage. My mom came here during the pipeline days from California, and so I am Eastern European in heritage from my mother's side. My name is April Kyle. My Dena'ina name is Zeke Ezla, which was given to me this year by tribal leaders in our region. And humor is one of our values. And my Denana name is named after a bird from Nanelchik, which is the golden crown sparrow, after my blonde hair. I have been with South Central Foundation for over 20 years. I've served as the president and CEO for the past 4.5. And before that, I was our vice president serving behavioral services division. And the topic today is really near and dear to my heart. Madam Chair, I'll try to do a good time of watching time to be respectful of the other presenters today as well. So what I want to begin with is why it's a really good time to think about traditional healing. We have an opportunity that we haven't had before at a national level to for states to apply and receive approval for waivers to add traditional healing services to state Medicaid plans. And we, in fact, have seen 4 states now incorporate traditional healing into their state plans. Arizona was the first state, and their submission became sort of the template that's used as states are considering these traditional healing waivers. There are other states who've submitted or are in the process of creating those waivers, and we are so excited to see our relatives in the lower 48 getting to expand traditional healing services, and we look forward to the same in Alaska. The other exciting opportunity we see is the Rural Health Transformation Program, and I just want to appreciate the state of Alaska for including traditional healing in its submission to CMS. And this is a quote from our state's Rural Health Transformation Program application to CMS, where it speaks to strengthening tribally led traditional healing services. So while this isn't currently a service reimbursable in our state plan, we hope it will be, and we look forward to working with the state on that. We do have the opportunity through rural health transformation funding to support continued training and expansion of traditional healing services across the tribal health system. So it's a hot topic right now for many of us who have believed and invested in the power of traditional healing in tribal health. So when I come to Juneau, I like to have a slide or two about, you know, what is the tribal health system and a little bit of history. I know that your committee, Madam Chair, is quite familiar with this already, so just 2 slides and I'll do them briefly. But I'll begin with a quick story. So when I grew up, we spent time here in Anchorage and in Nanelchik, the village that my family's from. And when in Anchorage, we would go to the Native Hospital in downtown Anchorage, which some of you may remember. Native Hospital was run by the Indian Health Service, and that happened because the federal government has a treaty responsibility to provide health care to Alaska Native and Native American people in perpetuity. So to accomplish that treaty obligation, the government created a branch of the government called the IHS, which operated clinics and hospitals, woefully underfunded, and certainly not the best health care in town. Amazing people working there in a system that didn't have the money to keep up with the needs of community. And if you remember those days, there were 3 hospitals in Anchorage, just like there are now. And the Native Hospital on 3rd Avenue was definitely the less desirable place to go. And in the 70s, a federal law was passed called the Indian Self-Determination Act, which acknowledged that the government-run IHS healthcare system wasn't working. And in fact, the quote was that it served to retard rather than enhance the progress of Indian people in their communities. It was a system of care that basically you could only enter through the emergency department and you would just wait and wait and wait and wait. I understand there was primary care and pediatric services. I wasn't working at SCF at the time. We were delivering those services in the later days there at the hospital. But you really couldn't get to them. They were so woefully underfunded. And what the Indian Self-Determination Act said is that rather than the government providing those services to Alaska Native and Native American people, that we would have the ability to contract and compact those federally appropriated dollars and begin designing our own Alaska Native, Native American-led healthcare system. And from that came the Alaska Tribal Health System, of which South Central Foundation is one part. So South Central Foundation, Madam Chair, as you included in your introduction, is a regional tribal health organization. Our hub community is Anchorage. Our second largest hub community is the Matsu Valley, Wasilla, and Palmer, where we operate at Bentonuta in partnership with Chickaloon and Kinnick tribes. And then our service area includes 55 federally recognized tribes, villages, where care is delivered in a number of ways. In some places, we are the regional provider supporting the locally run healthcare. In other places, we are the direct care provider in those local communities. Our service area includes 70,000 Alaska Native people, or 40% of the state's population. And in Anchorage, we also co-manage in partnership with ANTHC, the Alaska Native Medical Center Hospital and Campus. So what are we about at SCF? And this relates to traditional healing. Our vision is a Native community that enjoys physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual wellness. So from early on, we acknowledge that healthcare oftentimes is only about the physical health of a person, and that we know that as people, our wellness is multidimensional. It's how we're doing physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And so our care delivery system is designed to support all of those elements of wellness. And we do that by listening to the voice of our community, who we call our customer owners. We are oriented differently than traditional healthcare to Alaska Native people, as they own our system. The hub of our system is our primary care model, and I've circled where traditional healing is in this primary care model. And I'm going to spend just a minute on this slide, and then I dive into specifics about traditional healing itself. We have a model where every customer, owner, or family is in relationship with a primary care team. And if you look at the center dot, that's the customer, owner, or family. And then around them are the provider, medical assistant, case management support, and RN. And they're going to be working with the family day in and day out with the support of people who are in primary care. If we have more time another day, we could talk about primary care. But the point of this slide is that traditional healing, it really isn't a standalone service. It's an integrated part of our healthcare delivery. And in the conversations that the primary care team has with customer owners and families, they may identify a need that could be suited towards a referral to the traditional healing clinic. Most of the referrals to traditional healing come from primary care. At times, they can come from other places. So in our look back over the last few years, we see referrals from OBGYN, and we also see an increasing need in the hospital itself for people who are inpatient and have a need for traditional healing. And we struggle to keep up with the demand for how many people would like a traditional healing service. So what is traditional healing? We often talk about the history of healthcare and where it began. And I would just like to say that Alaska Native people have been caring for each other since time immemorial. And we have traditional ways of knowing how to care for the wellness of people and families. We want to ensure that that traditional knowledge and way of knowing continues to be part of our care delivery into the future. So South Central Foundation began in the 80s with direction from community about the importance of culture. And in the 90s, really started developing our traditional healing program. At the time, clinically, that was led by Dr. Rita Blumenstein, who helped found the program. And we opened the clinic itself back in 2001. So what kind of traditional healing services do we have? If you've been in Anchorage in the Yagali Shesh Kinka Primary Care Center and you walk in that front door, you see a gathering place where families can be together, and the only clinical service you see is the traditional healing clinic, which is on the right. The traditional healing clinic receives referrals, and I spent time in the clinic yesterday, and they shared the most common referral types, the reason for the referrals. And those included pain, people who want to better understand their illness or a new diagnosis, who want to understand the root cause of pain, who want an alternative to medicine or prescriptions. People are referred related to grief or to receive traditional or holistic support, to work on addiction and recovery from addiction, or to explore any other kind of challenge that they're facing in their wellness, be it physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. And it's one of the places in our system where we really focus on that balance of whole person and whole family wellness. I mentioned the Anchorage location because it's definitely our biggest hub. We also have a tribal doctor who works out of our Nilavina Clinic, which is in Iliamna, Alaska. And she serves as our rural traditional healer and is able to travel to various rural sites. And then exciting news, our largest expansion right now through the chair is in Wasilla as we are expanding Bentonuta. And if you have been to the Bentonuta Primary Care Center, it's big and it's beautiful and it is doubling in size and the steel is going up. It's a really big expansion in the Matsu Valley. That is our fastest growing community. And we worked with community and tribal leaders about what we should include in our expansion. And the expansion estimates the population change to the year 2036 and builds out the physical space needed to meet the care delivery for the Alaska Native people in that area of the state. And so what you see in that expansion is mostly more of the same, more primary care, more behavioral health, dental optometry. There are a couple of new services, and one of them will be traditional healing based on the voice of community. It's hard to get all the way into Anchorage to receive that service, and so we'll have dedicated space for traditional healing in the Matsu Valley when that new construction ends. We're very excited about that. So what are the actual services provided in the clinic? There are basically two modalities. One is a counseling, traditional counseling service, and the second is a traditional physical wellness service that includes healing touch. In addition to the individual care visits that tribal doctors provide in the traditional healing clinic, they also manage our healing garden. So we have a garden that includes indigenous plants. And while we're not able to prescribe those plants, we're able to provide education about the traditional use of plants in Alaska. They deliver talking circles and cultural classes, plant education, sewing, beading, drumming, and salve making. And I will just ask you to think about a time when you could hear the beat of the drum in the distance, and you could feel that drum in your heart to recognize the wellness that the sound of that drum can bring. And I will also ask you to imagine how busy our lives are and the opportunity to sit with other people and bead together. And the wellness that it brings to have that connection both to culture and to each other. So those are the types of services that are delivered in the traditional healing clinic. I think one of the big questions that we face is how will we ensure that we have tribal doctors in the future? To meet that need, SCF has created a elder council. We started that, way back in the 90s, that oversees the curriculum that we've developed and the process by which somebody becomes a tribal doctor. It's a years-long process. I had somebody ask me yesterday. We hosted the IHS, and they said, how long does it take? And my answer was, it's not like a traditional Western education program that has a calendar year start date and end date. The way that people became a traditional healer has to do with the time that they spent in apprenticeship and when elders felt that they were ready to receive that title. And that's, in fact, the way that apprentices become traditional healers today. So the first step is an opportunity to become a trainee, and we have had four cohorts of trainees. Trainees are usually SCF employees. We have 3,000 employees. So they are Alaska Native people who are called, who feel they may have a gift, or who want to pursue a career as a traditional healer. They are given time away from their, so maybe they're a CMA, let's say, and they're given time away from their job as a CMA to explore the opportunity of maybe becoming a tribal doctor. And over the course of a year, they move through three levels, training one, two, and three, and they spend, you know, 4 hours a week, and it increases up to 6 hours a week, exploring this profession of being a tribal doctor. We call it a two-way interview. So it's so that the Alaska Native person can think about, is this a career path they want to take? Is this what their future might be? And it's also a chance for our tribal doctors and our elder council to get to know a cohort of people and to see who they think might become tribal doctors in the future. Upon completion of the training program, we open up a job opportunity for an apprenticeship. Candidates apply for that apprenticeship, and they, if selected, they actually leave their full-time job, and their new full-time job is to apprentice and work full-time in traditional healing. That could include current SCF employees or, you know, anyone else who is eligible to be a tribal doctor apprentice. And they will have a set curriculum that they are going to accomplish, and they will work under an existing tribal doctor. And over time, they may become eligible to be considered by the Elder Council to receive that doctor title. The apprentices are practicing under the supervision of the tribal doctors. And last year, this is really exciting news, we had two apprentices receive their tribal doctor title, which was a big celebration for us. And we have been following this model of both delivering traditional healing, developing the curriculum, and creating the process by which somebody becomes a tribal doctor since the 90s. And we've been doing that in a healthcare accredited hospital campus setting. So it's a pretty formalized process that we hope accomplishes what's needed in our world today around healthcare, but honors the traditional knowledge and ways of knowing and healing that culture and traditional healing can bring. So does it, you know, what's the impact, right? In 2017, and then again in 2025, we asked our research and program evaluation department, we have a pretty pretty amazing research function at South Central Foundation, just one of those functions that exists in tribal health. And we asked them to evaluate outcomes. So, you know, what happens when somebody goes to traditional healing? And so I'm going to share the 2025 results, although it affirmed the 2017 results, and share with you that the method for evaluating the outcomes of traditional healing was to to look at a group of people, every person who'd received the service over a three-year period. And so that was 1,409 people, to be exact, over a three-year period, and to look at their pre- and post-results. So for clinic visits and healthcare system utilization, we compared the year prior to referral to the year after discharge. And for outcomes self-reported, we looked at the pre-survey, the pre-report and the post-report after discharge. And what we found were it was that for people who had a pairing of evaluation pre and post, there was statistically significant reduction in pain, self-reported pain, and pain management, and an increase in overall health. What we also saw was that in the year after discharge, especially for those people who utilize healthcare the most, there was a decrease in both primary care utilization and also emergency department utilization. People were more stable. They felt better. They had the support of traditional healing. And those are both expensive services, emergency services and primary care. They are services that we struggle to keep up with, right? They're high demand services. And we can show that by delivering traditional healing, we are able to reduce some of that pressure on other parts of our healthcare system, in addition to the positive outcomes of reduced pain and improved overall health. So, Madam Chair, I'm just noticing time, and I'm going to go ahead and wrap up for you and just say that, you know, when I think about my own experience and my family, my grandmother grew up in Inelchik when it was a very small village, and while there was a little bit of cash economy, most of the way we lived was a subsistence and community lifestyle. At that time, it was possible to apprentice, to spend time with an elder or a traditional healer. In today's world, that can only be possible if we create those opportunities. If we don't invest in traditional healing, we run the risk that we won't have younger people with the opportunity to really apprentice and become tribal doctors. And my goal is that tribal doctors and traditional healing will be part of the healthcare system for our community for many generations to come. And then the last thing I'll say in closing is I look forward to learning from other parts of Alaska's tribal health system in the next speakers, and also from our relatives in the lower 48 as we see traditional healing recognized as a valuable healthcare service across the country. Madam Chair, thank you very much for allowing me to present today. And I will stay so that I'm available for questions at the end of the hearing. Okay. Chanan.
Anabasi, thank you, Ms. Kyle. Thank you for your presentation. And I just, before we move on to the next presenter, I just wanted to welcome at 8:15, Representative Ruffridge, let the record reflect. And then at 8:16, Representative Schwanke, welcome. So we are going to hold questions until all three tribal health entities give their presentations. Thank you so much, Ms. Kyle. We're going to take a brief at ease to get ready for the next presenter. All right, we are back on record. We have our next presenter already. We will now move on to Manilik Association's presentation online. We have Dr. Anders, Chief Medical Officer of Manilik Association, and Mrs. Cheryl Richards, Tribal Doctor of Manilik Association. Can you hear us okay?
Yes.
Wonderful. please put your name on the record and continue with your presentation, or proceed with your presentation.
For the record, I'm Dr. Robert Anders, Chief Medical Officer of Mininglick Association.
Good morning. We could hear you just perfectly.
Morning. I'm Cheryl Richards, the tribal doctor from Mininglick Association.
Good morning, Dawinta. Thank you for being here. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, if we could go to the next slide, and I'll start and then hand it over to Cheryl. Now, I'll just give a brief overview of Mininglick Association. We're a regional tribal health organization in Northwest Arctic. We serve Northwest Arctic Borough as well as the village of Point Hope. In our region, we have around 8,000 residents in the region spread between 12 locations. In Kotzebue, we operate a 17-bed critical access hospital and outpatient services that serve the rest of the region. There's 11 villages surrounding. Largest villages, Point Hope and Selawik, are about 1,000 people. And we have four smaller villages, around 250 people in the region. We base our services out of Kotzebue, but have all village clinics in the 11 other locations. And I won't go into detail. I think Ms. Kyle did a great job overviewing tribal health system. We are governed by the 12 tribes of the region with elected representatives that serve on the Mininglick Board of Governance. And I'll turn it over. I think the most important speaker is Cheryl, our tribal doctor, who's been doing it for Mininglick for 25 years. Mm. Next slide before Cheryl gets started.
Morning, everyone. When I think of the Tribal Doctors Program, I think of the history of this program in the Mininglick service area and the impact that it had not only on our people, but the whole state of Alaska. With the lifestyle that we have today, this vital program is even more important than ever. In the past, our people walked or used dog team to travel and ate food from the land, ocean, and rivers. Now, most people drive trucks, cars, snow machines, or four-wheelers and get food from the store. Many of these foods causes health problems that our grandparents never faced when they were young. In larger communities like Kotzebue, Nome, Barrow, and Bethel, it's even harder since people can order meals when they're too tired or busy to cook their meals. There's also fast food places in the bigger towns. Because of these changes, we now see more problems like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and heart disease. I've noticed that I see more patients today with circulation problems than when I started as a tribal doctor trainee back in the late 1990s and the early 2000s. Back in 1997, I received care from the tribal doctors in Kotzebue, which made a huge difference in my mobility. This vital service must continue to benefit everyone. I am very passionate about what I do. The tribal doctor's exam room at the hospital and my setups in the outlying villages and events across Alaska has always felt like a home away from home for me. I take pride in always giving my best to help others. Some of the services that the tribal doctor's program offer are manipulation and massage of the abdomen, liver, intestines, stomach, and womb, address and alignments of dislocations and sprains, advice and use of traditional herbs and plants. On a trip to an outlying village, soon after my arrival, fog rolled into that community as well as in Kotzebue. There was a young boy whose thumb went out of its socket. After the local health aides communicated with the ER staff in Kotzebue, it was recommended that somebody at the clinic attempt to put that thumb back in place because they weren't able to get a plane in to get the boy due to the thick fog. I put his thumb back in place and the plane was able to pick up step away later on that evening when the fog lifted to address his concussion and x-ray his hand. When I travel to outlying villages, I tell the clinic staff that I would like to see all the elders on my list as well as chronic pain patients first, some of whom would require home visits because of the lack of mobility. On another trip to another village, I was working on an older patient whose mother was a well-known tribal doctor in the region. As I was working on that individual, they started crying. I immediately quit working on the person and asked if I had hurt them. Their response was no. But when I close my eyes, it's as though my own mom is working on me like she used to. Over the years, the hardest part about traveling for work was leaving my son at home. Not too long ago, I had a conversation with my son, who is a young adult now, who said he always understood that when I traveled for work as a tribal doctor, he knew that I was helping people who were hurting and didn't have access to see me on a regular basis. I recently attended a career fair at the local high school to promote the tribal doctors program. Now that I'm older, I often wonder who from the younger generations will take on this responsibility. My greatest fear is that one day this program might not exist, which would break my heart, knowing that Della Keats gave so much and taught what she knew to benefit the lives of everyone. I want to end with the wise words of Della Keats. If we love each other's and try to help each other's, it all works right. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair, and for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Anabasi, Ms. Richards, for your amazing talk, and it's very much appreciated. Please continue.
Madam Chair, I'll continue with some of that operational aspects of it, and I think we're on the slide with the picture of Della Keats. And as Cheryl noted, Manilik area has had a long history of tribal doctors and a large program at times and smaller now than it had been. But it had been formally connected and associated with the health services since 1975, and Della Keats was essential in establishing it as a connection to the other health services provided in the region. Next slide. And as noted with the previous presenter, I think the tribal doctors and their connection with health services helps in providing services that are challenging in the region, that particularly related to the chronic pain patients, to get the care they need in the region has been extremely beneficial versus having to travel to Anchorage. We do have workforce challenges in the region and turnover of workforce, whereas the tribal doctors are consistent providers over many years within the region. And also, having Western-trained providers is not always as culturally relevant as the tribal doctors can provide to our patients in the region. Next slide. And I think Cheryl touched on the services the tribal doctors provide in the region. And the tribal doctor at Manilik, Cheryl's at the hospital right now. Her office is in exam rooms right in with our outpatient providers. And it is very much complementary medicine to our existing Western-trained doctors. The tribal doctor can make referrals to our Western-trained doctors, and Western-trained doctors can make referrals to the tribal doctors. Cheryl's in the hospital, so she can also access the inpatients, go to long-term care to see patients in the emergency department as well. So it is very integrated service at Manilik. Next slide. And from my kind of Western-trained perspective, I think, we have services that are approved in other areas, such as healing hands, acupuncture related to chronic pain. And that, from my perspective, the tribal doctors provide some of those same services and are extremely beneficial with people with pain that, as a physician, you may only have pills to give them. And this is a much better service than taking medicines for chronic related pain. And they, as Ms. Kyle noted, extremely beneficial in getting better with their services from the tribal doctors. Next slide. And I think the training program at Manelik, which Cheryl explained to me, is very similar to what was described with South Central Foundation. It is very much an apprenticeship process. And it can take an indeterminate amount of time till someone's ready. And it really depends on the kind of master tribal doctor and the group of tribal doctors to determine if the person's right for being a tribal doctor and if they are ready to practice on their own. And that can take 2 to 5 years, depending on their past history. We have many in the region tribal doctors that are not employed by Manelik that provide services in the community. And expanding those services and bringing more of them connected to the health service, I think, would be overall beneficial to the health of the people of the region. And that concludes our presentation, Madam Chair.
Okay. That was great. Thank you so much. So I think what we're going to do is go to our next presenter, and we will go to questions and answers after Clinkett and Haida's tribal healing presentation. So we will move on. Let me look at my notes here. All right, we have Clinkett and Haida online.
Hello.
Presentations. We're just pulling up your slideshow. Are we all ready?
I'm ready on my end, yes.
Okay. Good morning, Ms. Jones. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Perfect. Yes, please put yourself on record and proceed with your presentation.
For the record, my name is Jessica Jones, and I am the Clinical Operations Director with Clinkett and Haida. And today I don't have a PowerPoint, I just have a handout to make it nice and easy for everyone. I'll start with a brief overview. Clinkett and Haida is a tribal government representing over 37,000 people. Worldwide, and we have a sovereign entity with a government-to-government relationship with the United States. Our mission is to preserve our sovereignty, enhance our economic and cultural resources, and promote self-sufficiency for our tribal citizens. We offer a variety of client-centered and family-oriented services to promote and support safe and stable families, assist people with learning and getting education to support healthy lifestyles, develop meaningful careers, and engage in traditional activities. From that lens, our Community and Behavioral Services Division was established in 2021 during the pandemic. So many of you may remember how the pandemic highlighted various issues that were previously hidden. So things like substance use, domestic violence, mental health needs, and more. And this highlighting of these issues really led to Clinkett and Haida establishing this division so we could start addressing those needs more head on. And that's what we're talking about today is our holistic, integrated, and no wrong door approach to healing. So I shared some statistics to frame up the environment or sort of the nature of the issue that we're targeting. Why we do what we do is rooted in our past and our future. So some may ask why we keep talking about the past, but it's because we're still feeling the direct impacts of it today. We acknowledge the deeply rooted sense of grief and loss resulting from historical impacts of forced assimilation, suppression of culture, degradation of resources, and undermining of sovereignty imposed upon the community over the past several generations. And we recognize that these staggering statistics reflect this historical trauma, and it's why our division exists, and it's truly what drives our purpose today. So just some of the key statistics I want to point out around these disproportionate rates of mental illness, substance use disorder, incarceration, victimization, and adverse childhood experiences. include American Indian and Alaska Native individuals. Adults specifically were 11% more likely than U.S. adults overall to report having a mental illness in 2023, and 17% less likely than U.S. adults to have received mental health treatment in the past year. Alaska Native and American Indian people were 91% more likely to die by suicide than the U.S. population overall in 2022. And high school students were 21% more likely than students nationwide to report attempting suicide in the past year. So that, coupled with the highest drug overdose death rates in both urban and rural counties, really speak to the need for strong behavioral health care, which is the core of what we do. And I want to share another recent statistic. And with race not accounted for every 320 people, there's one behavioral health provider in the U.S. And for every 1,000 Native Americans who need or want mental health care, there's only one Native provider. So I want to recognize that even if we have services, there are still barriers to accessing services. So we recognize these statistics and we know that real barriers exist. So to truly heal is to be able to trust, and we acknowledge that trusting can take time. There can also be a lack of understanding on providers' side due to cultural differences. There can be limited resources. And as an example, we know SEARCH exists and provides behavioral health services, and yet we still needed to develop this service ourselves. And additionally, sometimes folks are not ready for treatment, even if others think they need it. So my hope is throughout this presentation, you'll hear the different ways that we attempt to address these barriers as we're trying to get a grip on these issues and make a difference for our communities. So as a division, we're comprised of three departments: our healing center, our community advocacy program, and our reentry and recovery program. Our healing center is CARF accredited. We were first accredited in 2024, and then we're excited to receive our full 3-year accreditation in 2025. And I want to highlight the importance of this because it reflects our excellence to achieving Western standards while still balancing and integrating culture and traditional healing practices into everything we do. And you'll see throughout this discussion that integration and balancing is really a core aspect of our division. The community advocacy program serves victims of crime, and it's co-located with our healing center in Juneau. So that's a resource for people that have experienced things like domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking. This is our first line of defense, where our advocates will meet with the tribal citizen and help connect them to resources, relocate them if needed, attend court hearings with them if needed, and all sorts of frontline advocacy. And our third department is our reentry and recovery program, which I'm excited to say was the first recovery residents in the state of Alaska to receive the NAR accreditation. And in 2026 was the first program in the accreditor's career history to ever have had no feedback or suggestions for improvement. And so to me, that just speaks so highly of what an exceptional program this reentry and recovery program is in Juneau for our tribal citizens and the community at whole. And I'll just mention quickly who we serve. We serve our Tlingit and Haida enrolled tribal citizens, direct descendants of tribal citizens, or household members. We really recognize how the people in the household influence and are important for the healing journey. And so even if someone is not a tribal citizen, but maybe the parent of a tribal citizen, we will still provide services to them in our division. We also serve people enrolled in other federally recognized tribes, and our, as I mentioned, reentry and recovery serves everyone until at capacity. So those are non-congregate housing facilities where people live on site and receive reentry support coming out of incarceration or substance use treatment. And so we will serve anybody from the community until we're at capacity, at which point we prioritize tribal citizens. And for community education events, we'll serve anybody in the community. So I'll jump into some of the services available within these three programs. We have individual, family, and group therapy in an outpatient or telehealth setting. We offer same-day crisis response. So we have licensed master-level clinicians that have same-day appointments available. So if anyone calls in or comes in need of immediate help, we're able to see them. We offer assessments and referrals. This can help people access higher levels of care or receive appropriate treatment recommendations and be connected to those services. We have case management, and we do prevention and education. So this can be anything from social media awareness campaigns to tabling at events, all the way to larger events like our human trafficking awareness events that you may be familiar with from the past, to community cafes in villages throughout Southeast Alaska. As I briefly touched on, we do reentry support for people coming out of incarceration or substance use treatment. They can live on site at our reentry and recovery program for up to 2 years, and we assist them with everything from finding a job to maintaining their sobriety, connecting to everything from getting a driver's license to everything else that's involved with reentering the community. And then the victim advocacy and emergency support. We engage in postvention crisis collaboration. So for example, if one of our villages calls on us to respond in the wake of an emergency, we will go there often in collaboration with our public safety department or Surge or other community entities in that community to help process and hold space following a disaster. We also do community healing events, which is an essential aspect of what we do. We acknowledge that community healing is foundational for making an impact. People often feel alone and they suffer in silence until they attend one of these events and realize that they're not alone. So community healing can really increase people's understanding of our past, present, and future, and give a space to heal together. And if that's done properly, it can also increase the rate of people seeking one-to-one care. Some examples of our healing events have included women's healing retreats, men's healing events there in Juneau. We have done youth grief camps and various initiatives with our cultural heritage department. So sometimes it's as simple as hosting a talking circle in a cultural activity. So we bring people together to make drums and then facilitate a talking circle after. And that's because we recognize how healing culture, engaging in culture can be, and the feelings that can come up when people are realizing how disconnected they may have been previously. And so we love those opportunities to work with our cultural heritage team and co-host events like that. We also do psychological testing. We have a contracted psychologist that comes in and helps us with thorough evaluations for our healing center. And we have a 24/7, 365 crisis line. And this is a partnership with our Alaska Care Line, or 988, for those that don't know. And this is a strong partnership that's we've developed as part of our 988 SAMHSA grant. We visit Fairbanks annually to help train the staff there and meet regularly with their executive director, because their provision of crisis response 24/7 for our tribal citizens is important, and we want them to feel equipped to do so appropriately. We also have one of our managers on their board of directors. And finally, we have a Culture Heals online platform for people to access cultural healing resources at their own discretion and on their own time. And that's free, and anybody is invited to go check that out. So that is sort of the overview of what we offer, and I just wanted to touch about what sets us apart and what makes us different. And so this is the second page of the handout. And what I really want to drive in is that our tribal values are at the core of our work. This is where we center our decision-making for policies, procedures, and the services that we provide. How we heal reinforces our tribal values, and it's truly the foundation of who we are. We recognize treating the whole person, mind, body, and spirit, while acknowledging the deep connection to tribal values, land, and relationships with others, including family, clan, and tribe. And an essential part of our healing work is believing itu yeyati, which means it is within you. We have the medicine within us to heal our wounds, and sometimes the pain of our past prevents us from connecting with our spirit or our medicine within us. And in our healing center, in our division, we join people in their healing journey to tap into that medicine within. Cultural integration and representation is another key part of what sets us apart. The tribe is a familiar entity for our enrolled citizens, and they know how to access it. Our staff are more often than not also tribal citizens. So our participants see themselves reflected in our space, in our providers, and in all the work that we do. We prioritize individual and community needs and reduce barriers to care and healing. So meeting people where they are at is something that all the way from President Peterson down has been driven into all of our services at Tlingit and Haida. The natural way of our ancestors helped maintain health and wellness of our people through hunting, harvesting, fishing, storytelling, ceremonies, dancing, singing, and language. And people often come into our care after decades of hurting, and we cannot expect change in several sessions. So ample time and flexibility is critical for providing care to our population. We anticipate things like dysregulation, no-shows, fear, and mistrust, and that flexibility and unique way of doing things helps us meet people where they're at and address those barriers. We have learned to dance in both worlds. So ensuring that culturally responsive and human-centered care while maintaining credibility and high standards. And again, that's our accreditation and our professionalism and program excellence that we are so proud of on paper, as well as the nature of our work and the human-centric, holistic way of doing things. Additionally, we have really strong collaboration with other programs, and a list of other support services provided by our tribe is at the bottom of this sheet. To give an example of different programs that we integrate with, we recognize that if you attack the symptoms separately without attending to the underlying condition, other symptoms will show up. So right now in many parts of the world, people are doing bits and pieces of what needs to be done to address all of these different topics. But because they may come from certain specialties, very few take an integrated approach, and almost no one recognizes the incidence and effects of trauma. So monetary assistance, housing, better schools, reforming political and legal institutions, all of these are essential for improving Native people's lives, but all of these efforts will fall short if you aren't also channeling resources into addressing and interrupting intergenerational trauma. And this is the core of our work. With that, we prioritize accessibility, trustworthiness, and we really support staff and attempt to build experts in the field. So another thing that sets us apart is our care for our staff and making sure that they're also on their healing journey and supported. We do everything we can to reduce burnout risk factors and address vicarious trauma in an effective way to ensure that our staff are well and that they stay and have longevity in the field. Some examples of how we do that include quarterly talking circles for our staff, division-wide monthly staff wellness initiatives, case consultations with clinical leadership for all of these different teams, and ensuring debriefs and processing after high stress incidents. We also have our community advocacy team working to start a wraparound style consultation meeting for our tribal citizens that may be tapping into a lot of our programs across the tribe to ensure strong communication channels and reducing unnecessary barriers for program participants. So that in turn leads to our priorities, which I can just let you read there. And I hope you can hear how our priorities reflect what we're doing and what sets us apart. We really believe in addressing those underlying conditions in that integrated manner and not just attacking one symptom at a time. We meet our citizens where they're at, and we allow them time, we allow them space, and we allow for trust to develop for true healing to take place. We want to blend our Western best practices with our cultural and traditional practices and make sure that we're accessible and have no wrong door to access our care. And finally, we want to ensure long-term financial sustainability for our division. And I will just touch on quickly how we're funded. As a division, we tap into various grant sources. I mentioned our SAMHSA 988 Tribal Response Grant. That's a primary fund for our healing center and behavioral health services. We also have an IHS grant that helps fund some of our substance use prevention and education services, our DOJ grants and OVC and OVW. Those all are what we tap into for our community advocacy, victims of crime grants, and our reentry and recovery program. We also have some minimal compact funds the tribe allocates to us, and we do contracted services to generate some revenue to support our team and our tribal citizens in different ways. As an example, we support like SHI summer camps, and we'll have a clinician there available and providing some education to their staff and to the kids that they're serving. And we also are working towards billing. And I just want to mention that Western standards can often skew our process when it comes to billing. And so part of what's so unique about us is that we don't work in this linear way where everybody, you know, everybody comes in and does an AST and then everybody does an assessment and everybody has a treatment plan and every 90 days that treatment plan is reviewed. That's kind of the cookie cutter Medicaid defined behavioral health access. And currently with our grant funding, we're able to have some flexibility and take more time establishing trust. We might not be able to do an assessment right away, and that's okay. And we have that flexibility. I want to also mention that the system can often fragment into separating addiction and mental health rather than holistic care. And so we love that our current model allows us to treat the whole person and address any needs that come up as they come up, rather than needing to shoehole people on one track or another. And I also recognize that the billing world can burn providers out through productivity demands and needing to, you know, sustain operations with billable claims. And so that's why we love this blend of grants and billing and contracting, because it does allow us those opportunities for non-billable community healing events and talking circles for staff and, you know, building in ways of doing things differently to ensure that we're meeting our tribal citizens where they're at and we're meeting our staff where they're at and we're joining everybody on that healing journey and keeping ourselves and our teams healthy as well. So I will conclude with that and let you just look over these other support services from the tribe. I've also included our tribal values on page 3. Since I spoke to those, I wanted to make sure everybody had access to see what those values are that make the foundation of our everything. So thank you all so much. That's a lot of words. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ms. Jones, for your presentation. It was a lot to take in, a lot of information. And if you could just hang out for a few minutes to answer some questions or maybe thoughts or be part of the discussion as we think about this topic of tribal healing. So with that, you were our final presenter. So for those of us here in the committee, if you've written down thoughts and comments along the way, we have South Central Foundation, Ms. Kyle, who's in the room, and her presentation. And we have Ms. Cheryl Richards and Dr. Robert Anders from Manilik Association. And we just heard from Ms. Jones from Tlingit and Haida. So that was a lot. I have some thoughts. Is there anyone who would like to start the discussion or thoughts? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Dibert, and thank you to all the presenters today. It was really heartening to hear of the care and culturally appropriate healing happening. I wanted to say a special thank you to Cheryl Richards and, let's see, to Dr.
Anders.
Anders, and I don't know if they're still online. And I guess, excuse me, I just think about the rural and remote part of our state and the extra effort in that region to meet people where they're at and in their homes and give care. And I was wondering, you were talking, I think it was Dr. Richards. Is Dr. Richards still online?
Ms. Cheryl Richards and Dr. Robert Anders.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that.
So, Dr. Anders and Ms. Richards, if you can hear us, I believe this question is for you on rural health, visiting folks at home, and being so remote where you have to deal with emergencies on the spot because of flights or travel restrictions. So, Ms. Story, do you want to? A rep story, do you want to?
Sure. Yeah, thank you, Chair Dibert. You were mentioning that you had a 17-bed, is it a hospital in Kotzebue? And if you could just tell me a little bit, is that like a hub area? And do you have certain times that you travel out to the other villages? Or how does that work?
Through the chair to Representative Story. This is Dr. Robert Anders for the record. It's a 17-bed critical access hospital, so we have a 24/7 emergency department that supports the 11 village clinics as well, an inpatient unit. We also have a maternal unit and still deliver babies in the region. A smaller percentage, if a lot of them still need to go for health issues or higher risk to Anchorage for deliveries as well. We have almost all our services do travel out to the villages. Our villages are primarily staffed by community health aides, and we also have nurse practitioners and PAs that are out there regularly. And then services like behavioral health, audiology, physicians. Cheryl Richards travels out to the villages, or tribal doctors travel out to the village clinics as well. So we try to bring services that we can do in the villages out there by traveling people out there. We have optometry goes out as well. Dental goes out to the villages. But as you noted, it is a lot of complicated logistics. The majority of the people in our region actually live in the villages. Kotzebue is the hub, around 3,500 people, but around another 4,000 or more, 4,500 live in the villages. So we do have a lot of care delivered in the villages through traveling.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you through the chair. And thank you so much for your care and work out there. It's so important. I was wondering how everyone is aware of the traditional healing opportunities available to them. I'm trying to remember how long you said that care has been going on for many, 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 many decades even. Back there, but how have you been saying that this more of your practice, so more people are aware of that and that they are going to receive that care when they come in to the hospital, so to say?
Ms. Richards or Dr. Anders?
Madam Chair, Cheryl, I think you're on mute. Sorry.
Sorry about that. So Cheryl Richards, I was talking to myself. Cheryl Richards for the record. Right now, when patients see me in the Kotzebue clinic in the hospital, I'm a one-woman show. I take my own appointments, or, you know, people come in as walk-ins. And, you know, like Dr. Anders said earlier, I do make regular visits to long-term care to see our elders there. I also see calls to ER on occasion. I do get referrals from the western side to for the patients to see me, and then I do referrals as well. And so out in the villages, I will communicate with the local clinics and we'll set a time frame and for me to get out to the village, and I will have them start announcing on the local VHF radio beforehand, and they will start a list of patients that want to see me. And once I get out to the clinic, I will take a look at the list, and I will let the staff know that I want to see all the elders and chronic pain patients first before anybody else. And some of those patients do require home visits, especially for the elderly that are, you know, in wheelchairs or have a hard time moving around. And, you know, it's always a blessing to, you know, reach out and visit with our elders.
A follow-up?
Thank you for that. I know on one of your slides, you and everyone talked about this, and it's very true in Western systems and around about the healthcare work shortages that we're having right now. And how are, I don't know if you have apprenticeships through your program, but how, like you said, I'm a force of one. How are you trying to help expand more of you, so to speak, in your region?
Like I said, there was a career fair that happened at the local high school, and I reached out to the youth, and there are tribal doctors out there, like Dr. Anders said, that are not employed by Manelik, and some of whom do reside in the outlying villages, and you know, on occasion they are asked to work on people upon request, not employed by Manelik, but, you know, out of the kindness of their heart, they will help others.
Thank you.
I just follow up. And to everyone whoever would like to ask this, answer this, and they don't have to right now. I just think any information, how we grow our own, so to speak. We're trying to do that within teaching. We're trying to grow our own through partnerships with the school district in the teaching profession. And I know through South Central and others, there's partnerships to grow more nursing care. But I think about the traditional healing, and I'm glad to hear that there's apprenticeships. I'm just wondering why there are not apprenticeships, Ms. Richards, in your area.
Well, during COVID, this program did, you know, it shut down for a little while. And then this program reopened just 2 years ago. So we are making strides to expand the program.
Thank you. And I think, Ms. Richards, you had mentioned that you try to go out to career fairs that to find workers as well.
Yes.
And I think while I have you on, Ms. Richards, there was part of your presentation that kind of spoke to me is on, like, part of your work. You'd mentioned sprains, dislocations, massage, and then herbs and plants for healing. And it just made me remember I had a family member a long time ago that had a bump, and I think it was like on her head, and it was from birth. But my grandparents adopted my relative, and for weeks, maybe even months, they rubbed and massaged the bump and until it went away. And luckily it got smaller and smaller. Now she's lived a nice long life, but just that long-term healing and how important it is in massaging. Like you said, the liver, the womb, and the stomach, and how important that is.
Yes, it is very important. And, you know, I'm also a recipient of traditional healing. My papa is a semi-retired tribal doctor. And, you know, I do have ailments that, you know, I deal with. And, you know, he does, you know, he could tell when I need, you know, to get work done. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to say it. Sometimes I try to hide it from him because, you know, he's going to be 87 in a couple months. You know, he's still hunting and fishing and trapping and, you know, shoveling snow. And, you know, I try not to overwork him.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. And that's, you know, to Rep Story's thoughts and questions on how do we train tribal healers and finding tribal doctors. That's got to be a very fine line and very tricky. I did notice that Ms. Kyle from South Central Foundation is at the dais here, and maybe you want to add on to that thought. Thank you, Ms. Richards. We'll go to Ms. Jones, please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's fine. Madam Chair, for the record, this is April Kyle with South Central Foundation. And through the chair, Representative Story asked a question of all panelists, which was to reflect on healthcare workforce shortages and why it's challenging to ensure that we have enough tribal doctors working into the future. I think it's a great question. What we know is that we can't meet the needs of Alaska Native people in rural communities with Western healthcare providers alone. And Alaska has an amazing story to share about how we are able to support community members to be community health aides, behavioral health aides, and dental health aide therapists. We also know that our peoples have a long tradition of traditional healing practices. We have an opportunity to really grow a traditional healing program And if we did that, if we really invested in it, the research that SCF has done in program evaluation shows that by adding tribal doctor services, we actually reduce the need for as much primary care and ER utilization, particularly for those people who use those services the most. So, so what's the challenge? Why aren't we able to have enough tribal doctors today? I think part of that answer is that our healthcare systems do have some base IHS funding, but the majority of our funding is just like other healthcare systems. We are funded by Medicare and by Medicaid and by third-party payers, so private insurance that people have. And that allows us to deliver services that those payers recognize as healthcare. In Alaska today, none of those payers actually recognize tribal doctors and the care they deliver as a reimbursable service. And so I think the opportunity in front of us is to use, you know, potentially rural health transformation program to explore expansion of trainees and apprentices and to partner with the state of Alaska to create a provider type. And I just want to really echo the words Ms. Jones said in her presentation about how, you know, when you add the Western elements of treatment plans and healthcare delivery to a traditional service, you run the risk of interfering with the traditional nature of that service. So we'll want to have really good consultation with the state of Alaska on how to ensure that that care delivery can still be true to the traditional ways of delivering care. But there is an opportunity in front of us to acknowledge the significance of traditional healing practices and to invest in these programs and for those programs to be reimbursed. And just to share with this committee, you know, if our Medicaid state plan included tribal doctors as a provider type and traditional healing as an eligible service, and tribal organizations were providing that service to Alaska Native people, which is what we do, that would be paid by our state Medicaid plan but reimbursed to our state through the federal plan at 100%. In other words, 100% FMAP. So we would be able to do that without additional cost to the state general fund Medicaid plan, because it would be 100% reimbursed by the federal government, and that is because of the federal government's responsibility, trust and treaty responsibility, to ensure health care is paid for Alaska Native and Native American people.
Beautiful. We have a question from Representative Freer.
Thank you, through the chair. Not necessarily a question, more just a comment I guess a note of gratitude through the chair. I just wanted to thank Ms. Richards for her presentation and her comments and her dedication to folks in the community. I think it's hard to identify an apprentice because I believe it really is a gift to have that healing touch. And, you know, my Aka believed that as well. And, you know, she believed that when you provided the traditional healing, you took on some of those ailments. And so when she would, you know, offer her sisters or other family members a massage or some kind of comfort, she would often shake off her hands after just to relieve herself from some of those ailments. But, you know, she also believed traditional foods were medicine. I've had my fair share of spoonfuls of beluga oil and sagarot tea. I could probably use some right now with my cold. Yes. But even tattoos, you know, if you suffered from arthritis or if you suffered from, you know, migraines, you would get they would tattoo the areas, like your joints, to provide that healing. Or I've seen folks with the traditional tattoos on the sides of their heads for handling migraines. But so there are many ways lots of traditional healing and lots of knowledge still around, just maybe not in that formal sense, I guess, in the community. So I just wanted to make that comment and share my gratitude. And I wish I had a spoonful of beluga oil. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Freer. Ms. Richards, did you want to have a follow-up or thoughts on that?
I just want to thank everybody for the opportunity for this time. What a blessing.
Thank you. I agree. It's brought up a lot of memories, like with Representative Freer and my, you know, when I would go out moose hunting with my dad, and he would teach me about, like, the plants and the herbs out on the land, and how, like, in the interior, he would always tell me how spruce pitch and spruce trees are very healing. He said they would chew on spruce pitch to help with toothaches, or if you're going to lose a tooth, you know, you just chew on that spruce pitch for days and days and days. And then also last year I had a lung infection, and my dad was like, what we need to do is, like, you know, wrap your upper body in spruce pitch and just walk around with spruce pitch for weeks. And he's like, that would heal your lungs. And then last spring, he said, one thing that we don't do anymore is take fresh spruce tips in the spring, and you collect them, and then you freeze them, and you, in the middle of winter, like, you put them on the stove and let it simmer in your house throughout the winter, and that staves off colds. That would help Ms. Freer with her cold. if we boil and steam spruce tips in our homes throughout the year. And I just thought, you know, these are long, I don't know, like, long time healing from our land and from this place here in Alaska. And so I just wanted to put that on the record. Any other thoughts? Yep, we have a question from Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for Ms. James, if she's still on the line.
I think we have Ms. Jones from Tlingit and Haida.
My apologies.
It's okay. Yeah, we have a lot of presenters. Okay. So Ms. Jones from Tlingit and Haida. And do you have a specific slide that we can look at?
No. Okay. On a presentation at the very beginning, okay. Ms. Jones, you outlined the issues that we are targeting, and I wanted to ask kind of a difficult question, but I'm very appreciative of the concept of a fully integrated approach to healing of the mind and body, and I very much understand the concept and where it's coming from, and I guess I wanted to ask a difficult question, that since the development of this program, this full integrated program, have there been any documented decrease in statistics such as substance abuse and suicide and sexual abuse?
For the record, this is Jessica Jones, and through the chair, I appreciate that question, and that's a hard question. You're right. We don't necessarily have mass statistics showing a decrease at this time, but we have the individual accounts of people that we've served and our own internal success stories. And so that's what drives us. And I know it's not big picture data. We don't necessarily have the capacity to do that research, although our grants, we contribute to that research, I think. We contribute to that data with our grant reporting information that we do. But we certainly track our internal successes and, you know, when people sort of graduate from our healing center, having achieved their goals, or graduate from our reentry and recovery program because they've achieved what they set out to achieve, you know, finding housing, finding a job, stabilizing, and engaging back with the community. And so those are how we count our successes, and in hopes that as this national data rolls out over the coming years, maybe we will see a decrease in those risk factors in those statistics. Thank you.
Quick follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up.
Kind of totally unrelated. Thank you for that. I just wanted to encourage everybody that has come and presented today to really, as much as you can, get involved with the schools and encourage youth, even through, you know, health curriculum opportunities, to engage young people with specifically details of, you know, being the health that comes from being outdoors, hunting, fishing, trapping, being on the land, super big part of my life. And the connection with healthy foods and traditional foods, it really does need to be reiterated at all levels for youth, because it is very easy to grab the fast food. It's the packaged foods. It's everywhere. It's easy. It's convenient. I understand. But our young people need to be hearing it from all sides, just how critical natural and wild and unprocessed foods are. So thank you.
For the record, Jessica Jones, may I make a comment on that?
Yes, Ms. Jones.
I just wanted to mention, I really appreciate and respect that comment. And I think, you know, in my world, we call it upstream interventions. And it's doing that early work and that early education to prevent issues before they are issues. And that's part of our sort of 5-year roadmap for our division and what we hope to do more of. And I don't think that is something that is Medicaid reimbursable. So when we go back to barriers and possible changes, especially, I don't know if anyone's familiar with like the ASAM changes, and prevention is no longer a level of care that is reimbursable from my understanding. And so having prevention services that can be built for or reimbursed would be another amazing shift, where we can do those upstream interventions and that early work and consider it healthcare or reimbursable care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Jones. We have a question from Representative Story.
Oh, thank you, Chair Dibert. I wanted to follow up on something Rep. Schwanke said. And I appreciate Ms. Jones's comments too about prevention oftentimes not being funded, so to speak. And I think about the education system, and I think about how the education system is overseen by local elected school boards, and I think about the curriculums that they approve and have to do reapprovals on. Social studies, English, health, and I think I really encourage reaching out to those systems, and I will encourage back from the education systems doing that too, because again, having access to our students in their school days to be doing these traditional practices. And I know it is something that school boards have been working at, and there's been, you know, a push for that. And some districts are farther along than that than others, but as, you know, traditional healing practices and just ways of life is what we're talking about here too, as much as a way of being, the way of the human being, and how we've gotten far away from that, and how it was, and a lot of the areas you're talking about was really punished for certain ways of living and ways of being, and having to rebuild that. And it's good for me to see what you are presenting today, to see, you know, what is in place and how much it has grown. And again, I like the career fairs. I like reaching out. I just, you know, encourage all the systems to be working together as much as possible. I don't think that's very helpful in some ways, but it's so true, and that's hard work, and I think school board members would welcome that. And I just know time is limited, and I'm sure there's you have your board of directors, and I think more that we can reach out and have our education system be emulating traditional practices, benefits everyone, Native and non-Native, and it would be very helpful to our school system. So I guess that was just really a long comment and not really a question. But I did have a question having to do it again. I'm going back to getting more practitioners. I mean, that is just no matter, you know, what level of care in the healthcare field, we have a shortage of workers. And so trying to understand the training again, and I appreciate Ms. Richards saying that she felt it was a calling, and Rep. Freer really, you know, backed that up too. And our Western situation is so different. But how do we trust that, you know, care, like, I have no doubt that the how do we trust the traditional care? I mean, if I could have some more ideas about, like, when I hear about traditional healing, it's like massage, it's like physical therapy. What is the training as you go through this practice as a traditional healer? And I, again, through the chair, sorry, rambling. I feel like I'm rambling. But I just don't even know what to call the profession. I know we've been referring it to something, but it escapes me right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Story. And this looks like actually a great slide to look at how other states are doing this training, or how are we doing it here in Alaska of tribal doctors and tribal healers.
Madam Chair, this is April Kyle for the record, and I think you're acknowledging me to answer that question from Representative Story. And I want to start just with the idea of self-determination, which is that Alaska Native peoples are best suited to design the healthcare systems and delivery models that meet the needs of our communities. And it's been a wild success, just an amazing success. And Alaska's often held up as the model of that success story. And I think we're, you know, sometimes most comfortable thinking about Western healthcare providers because we know what their training was, we know what their boards look like, and we know the accreditation standards that allowed them to accomplish that nursing certification or that physician title. But we also know that tribal healthcare is just as capable of creating certification programs, training programs, and apprenticeship programs that can prove an appropriate scope of practice for its training and can deliver care in local communities. And we've been doing that in Alaska for decades through the community health aid, behavioral health aid, and dental health aid therapist programs. Those are programs with certification boards, with education programs, with the necessity not just to receive education and training in a classroom, but also to receive supervision in the field as care is delivered. And most importantly, that those training levels, so long as you're practicing within the scope of your training level, are reimbursed by our state Medicaid plan and then reimbursed to the state with 100% FMAP. The same can be true for a tribal doctor apprenticeship program. So just to share briefly about how SCF does that, and we're just one example, and we want to expand and learn and grow more. I want to appreciate the comments made about how that people may have a gift for traditional healing. And the question is, do we create the space and time for people to connect to that gift and to develop that gift? And so what we've tried to do through the training level is allow people to raise their hand and say, I'd like to explore that. And to be given by SCF, we start with 4 hours a week away from your normal job to come and spend time both in traditional healing with tribal doctors, but also with your home tribe and elders in your community. And to, over the course of multiple levels, decide, you know, if this feels like a path that's right for you, if you've connected with your gifts of healing, and also for the tribal doctor program to make that sort of same assessment. And then if after that year goes by and it feels like that's a right path for someone, both for them and for us, then we could hire them full time as an apprentice. And I think as we walk forward in a model where we acknowledge this as a important part of care delivery, we could talk about how it could be reimbursed at each of those levels, appropriate to its scope, and under the apprenticeship of an approved tribal doctor. And, you know, I think the natural question that comes from what Ms. Representative Story asked is, well, who decides who a tribal doctor is? And the answer is, of course, Alaska Native people do. And we can create those. For us, we call it a traditional healing elder council. But through a model of self-determination, that should be determined locally in each area as this is developed further.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kyle. And sorry, it's easier to look at someone in the room and acknowledge them. I appreciate your answer to that. And I want to give a space maybe to Ms. Richards, who is out in a rural community and doing these kind of supervision of tribal healing, if you would like to add to that question or thought on how do we do this? How do we find apprenticeship? And I appreciate Ms. Kyle's answer of, like, it takes time. You know, we live in a world where we are rush, rush, rush. We know down here in the legislature, we're running from meeting to meeting. And even to become a doctor, you have to, like, do so much in such little time that this kind of learning is different, the space and time. And, you know, what Ms. Richard said, that her traditional healer is still healing, even in her 80s. So once we find these people, we have them for a long time. So Ms. Richards, if you would like to comment on that question of how do we do this?
Okay, Cheryl Richards for the record. Getting back to a personal story, when I was a teenager, I had a cousin who worked at one of the local airlines who would lift luggage and freight all day, and at the end of the day, he would stop by the house or give me a call and ask me to, you know, work on his back. And there's this one summer day where my grandma told me in Inupiaq to get ready and go and follow her. So I didn't know where we're going, so I put on my shoes and we're out the door. And she took me to a local tribal doctor who was not employed by Manilik, but her specialty was helping, you know, pregnant women. And so my gram was telling Alik in Inupiaq that I always help my cousin. And so she, in a stern voice, this elder looked at me and said, "Cheryl, go sit by me." So I sat by her, and so she gave me her hand. And she said, "Tell me what's wrong with my hand." So I started working on her hand, and I got to a certain spot, and I said, "Alik," everybody called her by her Inupiaq name, "Alik, your problem is right here." And she said, "Ah, you know, you have smart hands. You know, continue to help people." And so moving forward, there are times where I am out in the field, you know, in the villages, and there would be patients that say, "You know, I think my child has this gift, because, you know, when sometimes when I have problems and there's nobody to work on me, I'll ask my kid to work on me." So I you know, am hopeful that, you know, I could meet with, you know, people like these, you know, these kids of this next generation to, you know, see where their heart is at, and, you know, how, you know, I could help them to hopefully make that career choice in doing this.
Thank you, Ms. Richards. Representative Story?
Thank you, Ms. Richards. Through the chair, has your association thought about doing apprenticeships? I certainly think you would be a wonderful person to apprentice under. Has your association given any thought? Because I understand it would be someone working as a, maybe in the association as a CNA or maybe not, but felt had a gift, and they would, your association would have to allow them 4 hours of work towards that. But have they talked about setting up such a system, such a model?
Dr. Rogers, would you want to take on this, or should I? I don't know if he's there, but...
Yeah, there. Yeah, either one. Ms. Richards?
We are talking about it for now. There's, you know, at least there's talk about it now. So I'm going to just let Dr. Anders take over.
Thank you, Ms. Richards.
Yes.
Dr. Anders?
Thank you. For the record, Bob Anders, and through the chair, we are and want to get this restarted. Manilik had a very big program when Cheryl started with tribal doctors, and we need, and I think at our board levels, feel like we need to get back there. We do have limitations with space. We're very constrained on space, and even it took a while to get Cheryl into a good working place. So space is a limitation, and as Ms. Kyle noted, I think a waiver that would allow reimbursement for these services would help us expand to bring in that additional revenue to allow us to support apprenticeships is a huge opportunity. So we have some limitations. I think there is a strong desire to start hiring trainees similar to South Central Foundation. We need to find space for them. We're really tight on physical space, and partly physical space. It is extremely expensive to build in the Northwest Arctic. And I think having funding streams that support this type of work would help us expand as well.
Thank you, Dr. Anders and Ms. Richards. And I think, I don't know who this question will go to on just kind of a final thought. I'm looking at our time. We have about 10 minutes left, but I was thinking about, before I was a legislator, I wrote curriculum where I worked with Indigenous elders in my community and with scientists up at the university. And one of the difficult parts of that was with our grants and our grant writing to fund these projects. We ran into Indigenous, it was very difficult to find Indigenous grant reviewers. I think I'm saying the right thing. And it seems like, you know, like we, when we think about Medicaid, it would be great to have like an Indigenous Medicaid reviewer or Indigenous grant reviewer for all the grants that are funding our programs. Is that, I don't know who this is for, but just when we go to billing and on that thought, if anyone would like to speak on that. And I'm looking at Ms. Kyle because she's here in the room. Ms. Kyle, I want to begin with you.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Ms. April Kyle for the record, and I'll begin and then welcome comments from the other panelists. I will say two things. One, you know, we really have to braid together many funding sources to do this work in tribal health. And I think one of the challenges sometimes with grant funding is that a grantor has an idea of what they think we should do, which is really opposite to self-determination. Self-determination says that Alaska Native people have identified a most important need, and Alaska Native people are best suited to design the intervention to meet that need. And so we really need grantors to understand self-determination in order rather than to be prescriptive, but rather to empower Alaska Native people to design responses to best meet the needs of our communities. The second answer I'll give relates to Medicaid itself. And I really do believe as we endeavor to add traditional healing to our state Medicaid plan, that we need to ensure there's really meaningful tribal consultation, which we know that we will have in the planning and implementation of any waiver and then the associated regulations that allow for the provider type and reimbursable services, so that we don't completely tie our hands with a Western mental model of what healthcare should be, and instead design a reimbursement from a more traditional perspective that allows for a tribal doctor to just deliver the care that's needed to the person that's in front of them today. No barriers, no handcuffs, just acknowledging good care. And hopefully, at least the research that SCF has done can prove efficacy. But I think in general, the Alaska Tribal Health System and its success in outcomes for Alaska Native people really are the evidence that's needed to say that we are ready to do this.
Thank you, Ms. Kyle. I'm not sure if anyone else online would like to comment or any thoughts on just the way we think about billing.
Madam Chair, this is Dr. Robert Anders for the record.
Yes, please proceed.
Yeah, I think, you know, a waiver like Arizona is a huge opportunity to expand tribal doctors and traditional healing in Alaska. But as Ms. Kyle noted, I think it's also a huge risk in having a regulatory body that doesn't understand what tribal doctors do, trying to determine the certifications required and the scope of practice. So I think, as you noted, having you know, Alaska Native leadership in establishing that process is going to be critical, because what we don't want is another Western health profession that has not been, you know, successful to the degree that tribal doctors are. And Cheryl didn't know, like, she's one of our busiest providers in the villages, busier than a physician. When we send a physician out to the village, Cheryl's list of people who want to see her is longer than who want to see a physician. That's just reality. And having it integrated with our healthcare system means that, you know, Cheryl is our a peer to our physicians, and they can share. So even getting Western services is more enhanced by having a tribal doctor providing those services in the same environment. But I do think we have to be very cautious on how it's set up. Similar to grants and having reviews, needs to be done by the people like Cheryl and other tribal doctors who know the practice, rather than, you know, trying to make this another Western health profession, which could happen when you start getting reimbursement or through Medicaid waiver. So I think that's an area of caution with that potential waiver.
Thank you, Dr. Anders. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Dibert. And this is probably to the committee and the chair. I would be interested in hearing from Arizona or one of the states that had set up Medicare waiver program or to incorporate traditional healing, to see, are they incorporated? How are they working with that? How did they work with the elders? It would be helpful to know that. So maybe in one of our future meetings, that person could be invited and we could learn more about it. I know with the rural transformation funds, like we talked about the infant learning program the other day, and we have a bill about going to, rather than 50% disability or delay, it would be to 25. And Courtney Enright testified on the record that to have the Medicaid reimbursement for that, because that's part of the bill, that will allow that to pay for operations. And part of getting rural transformation funds is it can't be for operations, and it can be for maybe training and other things, but a way to stabilize infant learning is to help with Medicaid I'm listing that as a service, and I don't know if that is something. Actually, it's been presented to us today. I think it would be worth exploring a little bit more. And then just a last comment is I just really want to encourage when there are barriers such as lack of space or what other things, and again, I don't know how, you know, whatever the barrier is, just to go forth, because I just know, I don't know how to make it work, and I don't know the space limitations is just an example comes to mind, but I just know we desperately need people in these professions. And if we don't start right now, when we, especially when we have the skill level of some of the people that are working there, it's just such a loss to communities and to the next generation. So I just really encourage growing our own and developing more people in our care of people. Thank you. And thank you very much for everyone's presentation today.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Story, for your that's a perfect wrap-up, I believe, on your comments and things that we could think about, especially with Rural Health Transformation Fund, program, and how we can have discussions around that, too, as we form that for our state. With that, we are really close to 10 a.m. We did it. thank you all so much for your presentations. Thank you, Ms. Kyle from South Central Foundation, for being here in person. Thank you so much. Ms. Richards and Dr. Anders, thank you from Manilik Association for your time and sharing your expertise, and for Ms. Jessica Jones, the clinic manager at Tlingit and Haida Anabasi, for your presentation. Thank you all for being here. That completes the agenda for our meeting today. Again, a big thank you to everyone. For committee members, this Thursday we will be hearing from the Department of Public Safety on Law Enforcement and Tribal Engagement in Rural Alaska. The time is 10 o'clock. We did it, 10 a.m., and this hearing of the Tribal Affairs is now adjourned.